Do you ever feel so desperate about one particular prayer that you just feel as if it preempts all other prayers? I have that experience quite often.
In a world in which we too often look out for ourselves at the expense of others, God calls us to be different. Philippians 2 says, "Let nothing be done through strife and vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, helping you lovingly put God's principles into action in your daily life. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about moping about what is not given. I was telling you the story in our last talk about God's timing and Jim Elliot's seeking the will of God as to his going to Ecuador. One sign after another was given to him, and finally he felt that it was time to go down to the shipping office and see if he could book a passage for Ecuador. There were freighters that went down the West Coast and down past Central America to Ecuador, which, in case your geography is a little hazy, is on the west coast of South America. He had received several checks from various friends in the mail and some cash that people now and then pressed into his hand after he had spoken in a missionary meeting, and he had simply shoved those bills or checks into his pocket and then unloaded them into a desk drawer. When he went down to the shipping office, he opened the drawer, pulled out what was in there, stuffed it into his pocket, and went down and asked for a passage to Guayaquil, Ecuador. There was a booking, there was an opening on one of those freighters, just at the time when Jim wanted to leave, February of 1952. And he asked the operative question, "How much?" $315, said the man. Jim reached into his pocket, pulled out the wad of checks and bills, counted them out for the first time, you guessed it, exactly $315. Jim had said, "I think we have a right to expect God's will to be exactly timed for good." When you think about what you've been given, you really won't feel much like moping about what is not given. But sometimes we feel like calling a moratorium on all our other prayers until God answers this particular one. Do you ever feel so desperate about one particular prayer that you just feel as if it preempts all other prayers? I have that experience quite often. My daughter and my dear grandchildren are almost at the very top of my prayer list. My husband, of course, is at the top. And there's hardly ever a time when I'm not conscious of some special need of theirs. I mentioned their housing needs. It's expensive to live in Southern California. My son-in-law is a pastor. They don't have a lot of money to pour down the gopher hole of rent, so they'd like to buy a house, but finding a house for a family of almost six children is not easy. So I've been praying about that one. Now I'm praying about homeschooling. My daughter will be homeschooling her children, and she needs help in the selection of curriculum and in finding the time, making the time, arranging the time to do that with three school children and three younger ones in the house. Sometimes I just feel as if I haven't got time to pray about all the other things, which really are on my list, but I need to concentrate right on that, and Lord, please fix it right now. Give me the answers now so I can get on with something else. One of the examples of a thing which really preoccupies me to the point where I can hardly get anything else done is when I lose something. When I lose things, it drives me bananas. Because I am a relatively organized person, I generally have a place for everything, and everything is in its place. And so when I come in to my study and my pen is not in the spot where it's supposed to be, or my glasses are nowhere to be found, I can't think about anything else until I find that pen or those glasses. All work comes to a halt. If I lose a letter, which is particularly important, needs to be in a file and it's not in the file. Then I begin to imagine all sorts of other papers that might have gotten lost along with that letter. Did I file it in the wrong place? In that case, I might not find it for years. Did it get dropped into the wastebasket by mistake? Has it slid down between the filing cabinet and the wall? And I get frantic. And I'd hate to tell you how many times I have turned the house upside down looking for something before I remembered to pray. Now, isn't that ridiculous? So I stop and I say, Lord, forgive me. You know where that thing is. You know exactly where it is. You know whether I need it right now. Please bring to mind where that thing is. There have been times when that thing has popped into my head instantly. The one place where I haven't looked. The one place that didn't even cross my mind until I asked God about it. And then it was so simple. There have been some other times when it has not popped into my head immediately. And I've chided God because I said, look, you've told me on other occasions exactly where it was. Why can't you do this now? You know what he says? You get on with your work. You do something else. Forget that letter for right now. You've got other things to do. Do the next thing. I'll show you when the time comes. When Jim was packing to leave for Ecuador, he wrote this to me in answer to a letter that I had written him about how I hated to miss out on all these exciting things that were going on in his life. Your sense of loss at our not being able to share things these past few months is not new to me. I know it, and often tell him about it. And such thoughts as, if thy dear home be fuller, Lord, are consolation. And then the realistic facing of non-accomplishment comes to me and crushes to silence all telling. For if really we have denied ourselves to and from each other for his sake, then should we not expect to see about us the profit of such denial? And this I look vainly for. It comes to this, I am a single man for the kingdom's sake. It's more rapid advance, it's more potent realization in my own life. But where is that advance and that realization? I am willing that my house on earth be emptier, but not unless his house be fuller. And I think it right that we hold God to his own bargain. I err, of course, in making the visible results of our separation the final test. But I reason thus that I should be more importunate in prayer, more dogged in devotion, and should not get, as you say, to a weary acceptance of things as they are. Besides this, there is the somewhat philosophical realization that actually I have lost nothing. We may imagine what it would be like to share a given event and feel loss at having to experience it alone. But let's not forget that loss is imagined, not real. I imagine peaks, enjoyment when I think of doing things together. But let not the hoping for it dull the doing of it alone. What is actual. What might be simply is not. And I must not therefore query God as though he robbed me of things that are not. Further, the things that are belong to us, and they are good, God-given, and enriched. Let not our longing slay the appetite of our living. The title of this talk is Moping About What Is Not Given. Do you spend your life thanking God for what he has given you? Or would you say that you probably spend more time moping about what he has not given you? Practice thanking God. Practice thanking other people. My dear friend Dorothy, old Dorothy Collins, who died down on Cape Cod 3 or 4 years ago at the age of 92, she had never married, but she was one of those mature, outgoing, selfless, delightful people. One of her watchwords was, tell them now. Tell them now, Betty dear. Don't wait until they're in a coffin. She was always thanking people, telling people how much she appreciated them. I couldn't tell you what dear Dorothy did for me, encouraging me and bolstering me up and cheering me and reminding me to thank God and to thank others. practice concentrating on all the amazing providences which have made your life as rich and pleasant as it is. Do you have a place to live? Do you have food to eat? Do you have clothes to put on? People who love you? Places to go? The freedom to move around without answering to the police? You know you have all of those things. Maybe it's not the place you want to live, the food you want to eat, those elegant clothes you'd like to put on. Maybe there are some people you wish would love you. You wish you could go places where you haven't been. Stop moping. My friend Vera Laska is Czechoslovakian. She was in concentration camp in Nazi Germany. Not because she was Jewish. She was one of the more than a million non-Jews who were put into concentration camp. She has the tattooed number on her arm. But Vera has said to me, Americans complain about everything. I can't get over the way Americans complain. She said, I wake up in the morning. I look out the window at the sunshine. I say, the sun is shining. I'm alive. In God's time, in God's way, your heart's desire will be fulfilled. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and He will give you the desire of your heart. But the heart's desires need to be corrected. One of the ways that we can contribute toward that correction will be by not moping about what is not given, and by thanking God for what is given.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.